Parsha Re'eh. All right, Parsha Re'eh. It begins with a very famous pasuk. Re'eh anochi noten lefnechem hayom bracha uklala. I am giving to you, look, I'm giving to you today a blessing and a curse. The Malbim says you can see the bracha on the faces of people who keep mitzvot. It's a very nice thing. Right? He says they lead meaningful lives, and you can see the bracha right on their faces. They feel connected. They feel fulfilled. Bracha and klala is dependent upon shmirat mitzvah. We will have a later description of a ceremony that takes place in Eretz Yisrael on Har Grizim and Har Eval. Okay, those of us who learned Sefer Yeshua, so we discussed it, we saw it, and this is near Shechem. Now, it's interesting, if you have an aerial photo, today you can look at Har Grizim, where the brachot were given. It's full of vegetation, it's green, it's beautiful. And Har Eval, where the curses were given, is dry and bare. Okay, just interesting. Look it up on your, Google Pictures, and you'll see it. It's very cool. Now, what must we focus on upon entering Eretz Yisrael? Moshe Rabbeinu says several things. First of all, we have to destroy Avodah Zarah. Okay, there was Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael before. We have to destroy it. Two, we have to bring Karbanot in the Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem, place that God will choose. Do we know what place that is? We don't know. It doesn't say. Now, where is that? Why, more importantly, why didn't God tell us? Why didn't God say, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to build a Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, and that's where you're going to bring your Karbanot? Why is it like the mystery bus ride? Why do we not know where we're going? So the Rambam says, because if it would be known, the Goyim will try to destroy that area. Okay? Devastate the area. Okay. Possible. Second idea is Goyim will fight to keep that area, knowing how important it is to us. That does happen. Okay. Third idea, we don't need Goyim to fight. We Jews do it on our own. And the Jews will fight saying, I want to have, Yerushalayim in my portion. I want to have Yerushalayim in my portion. But when no one knows that the Makom Mikdash can be Yerushalayim, so who that cared who got Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim was no different than any other city because no one knew where the Beit HaMikdash was going to be. Once God chooses the location, then local bamot, what's a bama? Altars are forbidden. But that's only when there's a location chosen. Meaning, for the first 14 years before we built a Mishkan, first 14 years until Shiloh, it was mutar to have karbanot on your own local altar. You can build a little altar in your backyard, have a barbecue, it's cool. And between the destruction of Shiloh and the building of the Beit HaMikdash, yes, sir?
You need a Kohen to do the service.
No. Some of them you don't need at all. Certain things you don't. And 57 years between Shiloh's destruction and the building of the Beit HaMikdash, it was also permissible to have local altars. Because it had been mutter, and it is a korban for God, it was a very hard practice to stop. And you go through Sefer Malachim, and we sort of judge these kings, and we say, he was good. Sometimes we even say he was great. The only thing he was not able to abolish was the local altars. And if you think about it, the local altar is like a shtiebel. Okay, yes, there is the big shul in town. That's called the Beit HaMikdash. But, my father davened in a shtiebel, my grandfather davened in a shtiebel, and his grandfather davened in a shtiebel, and now you're telling me, oh, I can't daven a shtiebel. I have to go to the big shul and listen to the choir. I don't want to do that, right? I like things the way we've always done it that way. Okay? What? The shtiebel is what? It's cheaper. Is what you said? What's a shtiebel? Shtiebel is like a small little house minion.
Okay.
They have a little herring afterwards with schnapps. Okay, that's a shtiebel. Okay. So, it was very difficult. Anyone know which king was able to actually stop the bamot? Nope. What? Chizkiyahu. It actually gets thrown in his face. Later on, when this apostate Jew goes over to the other side and starts trash-talking and says, your God won't be able to save you, why would your God save you? Look, Chizkiyahu destroyed all the bamot. In other words, like, he's a terrible person. It's like, could you imagine? Like, destroyed all the shtiebels. Wouldn't that be a terrible person? That's exactly, he throws it back in their face. You could tell he was a Jew. He knew exactly how to throw it back in their face. Here's this interesting thing. Rav Soloveitchik says, based on a midrash, that had it not been for the sins of Bnei Eli, beginning of Sefer Shmuel, Shiloh would never have been destroyed. Shiloh, the Mishkan, would never have been destroyed. It would have been the permanent home of the Shekhinah. Bnei Eli, Eli was the Kohen Gadol, sons went off to Derech, then the Mishkan gets destroyed. But as we know, the Mishkan and Shiloh is not like the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash. It was a permanent structure. It wasn't these like Lego pieces that we just put together and took apart. It stood there for 369 years. Rav Soloveitchik said, and that's what maybe means, HaMakom HaShe'evchar was, who says God was set on Yerushalayim? It was up to us. Had we been good, that would have been the permanent home of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That would have been Makom Asher Yivchar. It's so fascinating. I was like, always thought, no, Shiloh, that's temporary. Do we have the Beit HaMikdash? But when I saw it in Rav Soloveitchik, we have like the Chumash. I don't know if we don't have it. I told Rav Itai to buy them. And I saw it in the Rav Soloveitchik Chumash. He was quoting a Midrash. He developed the idea. But he was saying, had there not been the sins, Shiloh would have been the permanent resting place of the Beit HaMikdash. Yes, Ariel, what do you want to say?
So many important things happen on like our bias.
You're right. Area. You're right.
So do you think it would be
I don't know. You're right.
Well, you know, all the stuff happened in Shiloh. It could be even more stuff happened in Shiloh.
No, didn't worse things happen in Shiloh? Like, all the, no, that was something
else. Shechem.
Yeah, four things
that
bad
happened. Yeah, but I'm just saying, that's it, I'm just saying. You're right, there are midrashim that go and look for things that happen in Yerushalayim and say, the world is created from the Evan Shtia, which was there. Is that after the fact that we have I don't know. I mean, that sounds a little heretical. I don't know. I don't know. But as Solomon said, maybe we would have found midrashim talking about so many things that happened in Shiloh earlier. I don't know. Yerushalayim is not mentioned in Chumash. I'm just saying, Yerushalayim is not mentioned in Chumash. Not once. Okay? Other places are. Beit El's mentioned. You know, like, there are places mentioned. And this is not. Midrashim came later and attributed early biblical events to Yerushalayim. Okay? And Makom HaMikdash. Is it possible other Midrashim would have been written had it never happened? I don't know. We'll never know. Like sometimes the Midrash is trying to teach me ideas. And if so, the idea could be taught whether I'm using Yerushalayim as the focal point or Shiloh as the focal point. If it's a historical idea, then it's something else. Obviously, you can't say it. We know that God told Avram to take Yitzhak to Har HaMoriah. So it would be difficult to say that's Shiloh. Okay? Great. Certain things we couldn't rewrite. I don't know what to tell you. I'm saying, when I saw this idea, I was blown away because I'm not familiar with every Midrash, and this is a Midrash Rav Soloveitchik was quoting, just to make up the idea, but it was, for me, fascinating because I never heard such an idea. Solomon and Baruch.
It could be that those things would have happened on Shiloh
had God, since God knows the future, maybe he would have made sure, he would have told Avraham to take his son to Shiloh because he knew that would be the eternal resting place. Possible. Baruch.
Going back, I think it was like 2 days ago, throwing my hat back into the heretics.
Yes.
We say so many things about, like, after the fact, like, after that happened. Oh, like, if they wouldn't have done this, Shiloh could have been, like, oh, if Rechavim and Yerubbaal got along, like, they could have been, like, Moshe.
Had people daven for Moshe Rabbeinu, he would have led them in.
Yeah, that's, oh, after the fact, you can say that.
You're right. But all those ideas are for us to learn lessons. That actions have consequences. And the same way, we sit there and we say in the Alah Nisim, because of Haman, we had like a near genocide. We have to realize one person, and we had later on a Hitler, one person can cause so much pain and suffering. So too, we should realize one person can alleviate so much pain and suffering. And our jobs are to be that person and to be the person that changes history. Sometimes occasions call upon people to like step up. And sometimes people, out of their sheer greatness, you know, do amazing things. And I think that's what all these lessons are. When we learn these midrashim, we're supposed to learn that. Don't just sit back and wait for someone else to do. In Israel, there's a phrase, Yesh lo Rosh Katan. Rosh Katan is he never takes the initiative. Right? If I ask you, I say, Baruch, do you mind taking down the chairs in the dining room? Of course you'll do it. Will a person just walk in and see a pile of chairs and take it down? Will a person walk in and see, oh, there's two doors getting into a small little entranceway in the dining room. One of them is locked. Will I take the 5 seconds to unlock the other one so that people can walk through too? Or will I say, I got through. Everyone else will get through. There's no need for me to make life easier for others. Do people take the initiative? Do people go out of their way to try to find cures for diseases? Will they say, well, I never got sick. It's in every field. It doesn't have to be Torah. It could be chesed. It could be anything. People take the initiative. All the people that win wars. You know, battles are won because one person, very often, does this courageous thing. We went to Kivat HaTachmoshet. So, you know, he spoke about these people that got awarded such high things where, you know, they said, I know I'm going to lose my life, but I have to protect other people. Do people take the initiative? Do they go beyond what the average person might do? I think that's what all the Midrashim are teaching me. And me personally, I don't need to know. I don't need to even care if that Midrash is historical or not. I'm looking at the message, right? I don't need to know. Let's say, for example, the Abarbanel assumes that when the snake spoke to Eve, it was a dream that she had, okay? Whether it was or wasn't, it doesn't matter. We're trying to learn the lesson of temptation, getting into your temptation. You were told one thing, like seduction. We're learning lessons, okay? Anyway, moving on. It's north of Yerushalayim. It's in the Shomron area. My daughter went to Midrashah right near there. Okay. Says the Gemara. There I go again. Okay. We were allowed to, now that we came into Eretz Yisrael, we have karbona, we can now start eating what's called basar ta'ava. We can eat meat just because we want to eat meat. Not because we're bringing a karban and we're allowed to eat parts of a karban shlamim. We're allowed to have a steak dinner if we want, just because we want it. Although we're reminded once again, even though we had this earlier, not to eat from the blood. There's a famous Gemara in Makos that we learned last year, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows that most people don't have a desire for blood. But Ratz HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zakot et Yisrael. The Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us all sorts of mitzvot. We get points. Some of them are difficult. Some of them are pretty easy. But guess what? Even though I refrain from eating blood, I get points for that. And I really had no desire to eat the blood. Some mitzvot are easy. God wants to give us some easy mitzvot too. But God told us we have to shech the meat. And how does it say it? Kasher tziviticha. This is a very important idea. It says to shech the meat. What's kasher tziviticha? What does it mean? Like I commanded you. Now you look all throughout the Chumash. It does not say how to shech the meat. So Rashi points out this is a source, probably the best source, that along with a Torah Shebechtav, there was a Torah Shebaal Peh. And what happened? People read this book and they said, well, Moshe, it says to shech the animal like we were taught. Was it? Oh, yeah, let me explain to you. Got to cut the majority of the esophagus and the trachea and on a bird, the entire, like, okay, went through all the halacha. Moshe was taught everything. Great. Now, we're also instructed, don't worship Avodah Zarah. Keep mitzvot, and we'll repeat it again without adding or subtracting. I think we mentioned it last time, but we'll say it again. The idea of not adding is Torah at Hashem Tamima. The word of God is perfection. There's no need to add to perfection, right? By you doing it, it's sort of insulting, right? You don't mess with perfection. What's the matter?
I just continue.
Okay. Don't listen to Nevi'ei Sheker, even if he performs miracles, even if he does all sorts of wonders. Now, there's a machlokas tanoim if people had such powers. Okay? Many people said there was some sort of black magic. Most people assume that the Khartoumim of Paro, his magicians, knew how to do real magic. And others, the more rationalistic Rishonim, say, no, it was sleight of hand, just like today's magicians, and they just were good at their craft. But whatever the guy does, he even if he walks on water, I don't care. He's a Navi Sheker. And we don't listen to a Navi Sheker. Now, the question is, how do I know who's a Navi Emes and who's a Navi Sheker? So, the Navi, first of all, cannot go against the Torah. So, the Navi comes along to you and says, you know what? You know, I got word from God. Don't have to keep Shabbos anymore. So, you know he's a Navi Sheker. You know he's a Navi Sheker. If, on the other hand...
Yeah, the problem.
If on the other hand,
well,
he
maybe it's a Sunday, say, no, to keep it on Sunday.
Right. Yeah. If on the other hand, he is a well-known Navi, he's already proven himself, so then he is allowed to temporarily go against the Torah if he's proven himself as a Navi Emes. Okay? He is now temporarily allowed to go against the Torah as long as it's not Avodah Zarah. That's the only thing that's, you know, even temporarily. Can't say, oh, just this time it's okay for all of us to bow down to this idol. That's not okay. But the best example is Eliyahu on Har Carmel. You're not allowed to bring Karbanot in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, outside of the Beit HaMikdash. And Eliyahu brought Karban on Har Carmel. He was already a well-known Navi, an accepted Navi. He'd already proven that he is a Navi Emes. So therefore, you are allowed to listen to him when he goes against temporarily, just this time, he's saying, let's do this, bring this carbon, that's okay.
What if he says, like, you're allowed to sleep with, you know, married women? Or like,
if he tells you, Avodah Zarah is the only one thing. Okay?
Murder?
Yeah. The Navi says, go and kill these people. We're told. The Navi told Shaul, you have to wipe out Amalek, men, women, and children. And Shaul didn't do it. Yeah. Everything except for Avodah Zarah. Okay. Now, how do I know he's a Navi Sheker or Navi Emes? If he predicts something good is going to happen, it must happen. Now, the converse is not true. If a Navi comes along and says, in 40 days, Nineveh is going to be destroyed, and it's not destroyed, it doesn't mean that Yonah was a Navi Sheker. Why? Because God always allows people to do tshuva to avert the tragedy. But if God promises a good thing, so then he is always going to come through with that. So if a Navi now promised you, let's say for argument's sake, you will survive this battle, you will come back healthy, and you don't, so you know that he's a Navi Sheker.
What if you could have talked to him battle that Hashem genius market?
Fine. That's why I said, you come back injured.
But how can you, it's possible that they could just predict something just based on probability. Like let's say there's a million people, there's a war, it's like a million to one.
You're right. If he's just telling you it's going to rain tomorrow, that's not going to be the biggest deal. You're right. We're talking about things that are bigger deals. Right. But I'll tell you a cool thing. If I remember correctly, it's the Beis Halevi who says this. How come at one point Moshe stops arguing with God to go into Eretz Yisrael? Because it's when God says Yoshua is leading them in. Now there was a Nevuah good for somebody else. God can't take it back. Right? Up until he named the replacement, Moshe could say, all right, come on, pretty please, I'll, you know, be a best friend. And he could try to do tshuva. God said, all right, I changed my mind, you can take him in. But once he said Yoshua is going to do it, all right, game over. God can't go back on that. Pretty sure it's the Beis Halevi that points it out. It's pretty cool.
That person deserves during the battle.
If the Navi made the prediction, so then it has to come true. And if God wants a guy to die, he'll die after the battle. But if he's like saying, the Navi made a prediction now, for good, has to happen. Okay, there is one Gemara in Shabbos that talks about the one exception, but it'll take me way too long to get into it. But it's like the exception that proves the rule. Okay? Yes.
Like,
no, Solomon's always rushed. What?
Sometimes they would take generation to happen, so how do you know?
All right. So if a Navi just says, you should know, I once read this article saying, was a Christian that was trying to say, how do you know that the Bible is true? Because if you look at the prophecies, the odds of these prophecies coming true are crazy. And if you add them all up, and he starts going through all these prophecies in the Old Testament, okay, we call the only testament, the testament. So he says, him predicting this is going to be the sea, whatever, the sea is going to split. It's like billion to one, a million. And then you have the New Testament 2-1, 3-1. And he says, and look, he put it all together, and it's crazy. You know, it's like the guy's doing the odds. And it was like so funny. It's like, and he gets it, yeah, it's 2-1. Could be rain tomorrow. Take an umbrella. So like, you know, okay, yes.
So how do we explain something like you mentioned earlier in Malachim that there will be someone who, there will be a person in the...
And he's going to destroy, but it's 300 years from now. So I guess that wasn't like the biggest nevuah. So what did he have to do? He had to do a mofet. He had to make the mizbeach split with all the ashes flying out.
Isn't that way, if you're going to destroy it, I would assume someone who's destroyed is going to destroy the mizbeach.
No, he just sat in a split. Okay. Yeah. Now, he goes on, Moshe Rabbeinu says, death to the mesit. Anyone know who a mesit is? Good. Someone who seduces people, convinces people, tempts them to do avodah zarah. Okay, this guy, no compassion on the seducer. We don't look to acquit. Usually, when somebody comes to court, we look for ways to not kill him. Not true with this guy. Rashi brings down in Parsha Bereishit, that's why we don't look for ways to acquit the primordial snake. The snake could have had a good argument, could have said, listen, I told her to eat, but you, God, said not to. Who should she have listened to? Divrei HaRav. Divrei a Talmud, Divrei Mishomim, should have listened to you. Don't blame me. We don't give him that line of, we don't like, you know, suggest that for the Nachash because he's a seducer. He's a temptress. And therefore,
he's a temptress.
She's a temptress. The Nachash, I assume, was a guy. So anyway, this is what we say about the Mesit. We publicize his execution. Everyone should learn about it.
Is that a Midrash or a Gemara? Or
because
we don't give the snake an excuse?
That Rashi brings down a Midrash.
Oh, okay.
I don't recall Rashi's quoting it, but I'm pretty sure it's a Midrash. But if not, it's a Gemara. Yeah.
Can we assimilate this?
You can look it up. Like some of the Rashis say where exactly the sources of the footnotes. Okay, yeah.
Can we assimilate the Mesit with someone who put obstacle on the way of a blind person?
Is he a Mesit? No, only Mesit. It's only someone who struck out his heart. Yeah. I'm even allowed to set him up. Let's say you were telling me to do an avodah zarah, but I can't get you killed just by my say-so. So I can plant two people outside the door, listening in, through the window, looking in, say, what was it you told me to come with you to do tonight? Oh, we're going to go as crazy avodah zarah. Gotcha, right? I could, like, you know, you're allowed to do that, okay? Because you are now, you're dangerous. I want to get rid of you. Okay, next thing. What? You're getting stressed. Okay, I got to move because I'm not even finished my first page. I know. I'm sorry. I got to move.
But there's only one happy.
I know. I got to finish. Okay. Ir Hanidachat is the city that the majority of people have done a vote of Zara. And therefore, we kill everybody there. Okay? Investigation. And afterwards, we kill everybody, including we destroy the property. People are killed by skila. The property is burnt to a crisp. Now, Moshe goes on and tells us that we are God's children. And because of that, lo titgodedu velo tasimin karcha b'nei nechem. Matan knows this because we learned Makot last year. What is this halacha telling me? Even when I'm upset and like mourning, you cannot mourn like Goyim did. They ripped out their hair. They gashed themselves. You're not allowed to do that. Okay? Why? I guess the best answer is because we don't believe it's the only world. And we believe God's in charge. And a person died, God knew about it. They're going to a better place. So stop freaking out. We're not supposed to act that way. What?
You can't beat yourself up to excluding light bruising.
Right. On death, we should understand God has our best interest in mind. And like I said, this is not the only world. We're an Am Segula, and with that comes responsibilities. Yes, what do you want to say?
Also, it's just the way of Gaia that we just don't do. It's like
that's a separate thing, but here we have extra things we get Malchus for.
I'm saying that's local, right?
We have laws of Kashrus repeated here with the signs for land animals, chewing the cud, and having split hooves. Fish with what? What are the signs?
Fins
and scales, not sins and fails. But anyway, say that three times fast. Now, and birds birds are tar unless they're not. And 21 exceptions are mentioned. And since we don't really know what each one of those 21s are, we pretty much only eat the birds that we know aren't kosher. So really, the majority of birds we should be able to eat if we knew what the 21 exceptions were.
Don't
yes.
eat the ones that aren't.
Don't eat the ones that are not. Yes. Also, we're told not to eat nevela. What's a nevela? Good animal that was not shechted properly. Died, was killed, or, you know, and the Isra of Basar v'chalav is mentioned. You can't eat Basar v'chalav. Right. Lo, t'vashel, gadiba chalev ima. Basar, milk and meat. Okay? It's mentioned three times in the Torah, so we learn out three prohibitions. What are three prohibitions?
Cook.
Can't cook it. Can't eat it.
Can't sell it.
Good. Can't benefit. Very good. Okay. Meiser Shani. That was Aryeh that knew that. Meiser Shani. Meiser Shani is to be eaten in Yerushalayim in which years? 1, 2, 4, and 5. What do I do in 3 and 6? Meiser Ani. But in the Torah, it doesn't say in Yerushalayim. It says in the city that I choose. Okay. We also learn about Meiser Bakar, that we have to give 10% of our cattle. And all of this is to learn Yiras Shamayim. Tosfos says, it's to come into Yerushalayim, we learn from the people around us. Come to Yerushalayim, it's the house of Sanhedrin. We see Kohanim doing the Avodah. We see Levim singing in the Beit HaMikdash. We see people learning. Okay? And therefore, it's sort of just, it's a means toward the end. The means is, I have to redeem my money, I have to bring and eat in Yerushalayim. The end is to be influenced by what we see around us in Yerushalayim. And when you come as well with the Karbanot, we're supposed to share with the Levim, just like we share the Meiser. Every 3 years, we said, we give Meiser Ani. We also do Bior Masrot. You get rid of any leftover Meiserish and Sheni you have in your house. We do Vidoy Meiser. We have to make this proclamation that I made sure that I did everything correctly. At the end of the Shemitah year, we have Shemitah Ksafim. What is Shemitah Ksafim? We had it this past year. What was it? Any loans that you had are canceled. Now, if you're worried, now it's a beautiful idea. The idea is to let people who are in debt be able to press a reset button. Sometimes they just can't get out of debt. We allow them to have debts canceled, press reset, start all over. If you feel you're going to be taken advantage of, there is a biblical way around it. And that is called Moser Shteratav LeBeisdin. You give your contract, your loan document to Beis Din, they'll collect it for you. Okay? What was the takana that Hillel instituted for all of us that made it easier? Prusbol. Okay? But it's based on this idea of Moshe Shtera Tavla Beis Din. Now, yes?
What do you tell the person who rent out the loan? I mean, if I give money to Theo, now he doesn't have to pay me back.
You don't get it back.
Theo, I'm not doing this with Theo again.
Okay, look, you should know, for many people, giving a loan is considered a higher form of charity than giving a handout. Why?
Because it
makes them feel like you trust them, right? And they don't feel, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like a handout.
Yeah, I'm looking for a word and I can't think of it. Okay, they bear shame. They don't feel shame. So I'm giving you a loan, pay it back. Okay, now if the person doesn't pay it back, so then, okay, so the Shemitah cancels it. The best is to try to look out for people's benefit. Yes?
I know that is meticulous. At the end of that 7-year period, he always gives a big loan to somebody, like the 2-3 weeks before the end. And he goes, oh, it's a Rosh Hashanah. Oh, well, can't pay back now.
Right. So it says in the halacha, you should try to do that. I did that also, but I wasn't sure. In the shul that I daven in, people come around, they take the tzedakah during davening. I can't talk during davening. And usually it's tzedakah. So I wrote a little note. And I put more money than I usually put. And I said, this is a loan and Shemitah will cancel it. And I read it, took the money, smiled at me and walked out. You know, this is a loan. But, you know.
A loan, tell them it's a loan to make it feel good, but then say, you know.
I want it back. That's what a loan is. You want it back.
No. Meaning, and then I basically.
Oh, so you can always not ask for the loan back. That's on you.
You know, say like, you know, I came into money, you can keep the money.
Well, yeah, you give the loan, you could always ask, you don't have to ask for the loan back. Now, the pasuk, then the psukim start going on, that I have to take care of the Eved Ivri. The Eved Ivri, the person who is either too poor or he stole and he couldn't pay it back, he's now working for me. When he leaves, I have to give him a parting gift commensurate with his production. The Gemara gives me minimums, right? You just have to at least give him a certain amount of cattle, clothing, and money. But if he, since he was by you, business was really good, should give him more. And this is learned out from when we left Mitzrayim. We were given parting gifts, whether it was against their will or not, doesn't matter. We're giving gifts. And so too, we should give people gifts. If he refuses to leave, anyone know what he's called?
Oh, he's called...
Good. Evan Nirtza. What do we do? Right? Nail the ear. Then he works for you until when? Yovel. Good. Yovel, you set him free. We're also told we bring our firstborn animals to Yerushalayim. If the animal was without a blemish, without a mum, he is brought as a korban. And he's eaten Yerushalayim by the Kohen. If it has a mum, it's just a gift to the Kohen, and then it's his property. He could sell it, share it. It's just not wholly made. It's just his. Torah now tells us about the Shlosh Regalim, with an obligation for every male to the Shlosh Regalim.
No. The Kohen doesn't have like a read for his aware. Do they put all their cows and stuff?
Well, I give it to you as a gift, and then he decides if he has too many, he'll sell it. Right? It's up to him.
The
Kohen?
Can't eat it. It's Jew. Yeah.
He's allowed to eat the cow.
Yeah.
I give it to him.
Even if it's a mum?
No. If it's a mum, it's brought as a korban, of which I share with the Kohen. Eat some of it. But if it has a mum, if it has a blemish, I just give it. It's all his.
Yeah, what can you do with it?
Eats it.
Shechs
it and eats it.
You can eat a mum animal.
Yeah. A mum just means it can't be brought as a korban. Could be like an eye slash, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Torah now tells about the Shlosh Regalim. Every male has to appear in front of the designated place. Again, the Torah doesn't say what the designated place is. 3 times a year. And not to appear empty-handed. Rather, you come with an Olat Riyah. Good. Very good. Olat Riyah. You have to come and you bring this Korban commensurate with your brachot. If you had a lot of produce that year, you should bring a lot of korbanot. This is seen as a proof of for divine origin of the Torah. Because what does the Torah promise us? I want every single male to go to Yerushalayim and don't worry about your estate while you're gone. I know that you're on the border. Goyim are right there on the border and you're always having guard duty because you think they're going to come in and steal from you. Don't worry. It won't happen. All the while you're gone, I will be manning the border, and no one will do anything. And this is what happened. Okay? We don't have any psukim where Jews complain about everything, that, oh, I went through Shalayim, and then my place was ransacked. So it seems as if there's Midrashim, that people saw guards. There was angels, according to the Midrashim, because there was no one there. All the males left. On Pesach, it has to be in the springtime. Chodesh Aviv, because that's when you see Mitzrayim happen. And therefore, Beis Din is enjoined to make sure that Pesach is always in the springtime by having leap years. Korban Pesach is brought in the afternoon of the 14th and must be eaten by morning. No chametz may be eaten. Matzah must be eaten. Matzah is referred to as lechem what?
Oni.
7 days. Remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every day. Now, Shavuos, there's no date given. It's the only holiday we have no date given. Rather, we begin counting weeks after Ksirat HaOmer, after we cut down the barley for the Korban Omer for 7 weeks. The next day we celebrate. Why? The holiday is all about preparation. Because it takes weeks and months and years, and it's all about preparation. It's not about the end product. Okay? I didn't make up the idea. I once heard this quote that in America, it's about the pursuit of happiness. And Judaism, it's about the happiness of the pursuit. Okay? It's all about that. Okay? I'm pretty sure I saw that by Rabbi Norman Lamb, but I'm not sure if it's his, but I think it's a beautiful idea. Now, Sukkot, the Netziv says, is the only holiday that's called Chag, the Mishnah's called Chag, because of all the Karbanot. All the Karbanot, we have so many Karbanot that are brought, and they're brought for the rain. It's called Chag in Mishnah, and the mitzvah is to be Sameach, to be happy for the bounty. It's Chag Asif. It's when I reap in, you know, I gather in the harvest. We are told to include in the celebration who? The Levium, who don't have their own field, the Ger, the convert, the Yatom, the orphan, and the Almana, the widow, along with Bincha, Bitcha, your son, your daughter, Avdecha, Vamascha, and your male and female servants. On this, on these two groups, God says, you take care of mine, Levium, Ger, Yatom, Va'almana, and I'll take care of yours, son, daughter, and your servants. That's how the parasha ends. All right.